Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for staying with us. Thank you for hanging around this morning. I appreciate it. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast to coast. I'm excited about our guest this half hour. She's a new friend. Monica Langley has written for the Wall Street Journal for a number of years now, at least a dozen. And she's an attorney. She's an outstanding investigative reporter. And she's written a work here, folks. It's not just a book. It's a work called Tearing Down the Walls, and it's how Sandy Weill fought his way to the top of the financial world and then nearly lost it all. She's going to tell us a little about this interesting character and some of the interesting characters who have been part of this man's life. Monica, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to have you here. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
You had a milestone this week. Tell us about it.
Well, the book was just released this week, and people started buying it up last week when they could get it in some of the bookstores, and it hit the New York Times bestseller list its first week out.
Congratulations.
So we're really excited.
That's a home run.
Thank you.
Good for you. Well, and I'm not the least bit surprised. It's a very well-written book. You did the right work, very professionally done. You did a good job as a reporter and as a writer, and I congratulate you on that.
Thank you.
Tell us about this man.
Sandy Weill is the man that was least likely to succeed in his youth. He he was nothing outstanding at the beginning, and he couldn't break into Wall Street because he was a son of Polish immigrants, Jewish, and back in the 1950s, Wall Street was run more like a club instead of a business.
It was more waspish in more ways than we'd like to think. It was probably a little more waspish.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It was really waspy. And mm-hmm. And even the segments that were Jewish were German Jewish, like Goldman Sachs, and they looked down on Eastern European Jews. So
absolutely.
It was a real, he had a lot of walls to tear down from the beginning. But then today, this book documents his career, and today he is the most important financial CEO in the world. He's the chairman and CEO of Citigroup, which is in 100 countries, has $1 trillion in assets. So here he has become a very powerful and influential person who had to overcome incredible odds.
He actually, in reading some of the stuff that you wrote about him and some of the things that I know about him, in a lot of ways, he's had a very entrepreneurial spirit in his life, hasn't he?
Completely. In fact, that's a theme throughout this entire book is he butted heads with the establishment all along the way. He was entrepreneurial because he had no other choice. He was starting with nothing, mm-hmm. and he could not break into the establishment, so he challenged it. And he has taken over so many small companies along the way, dozens and dozens, and run them like an entrepreneur, where he gave managers options to think like an owner. He got down to the level. He does not believe in bureaucracy.
So even his management style was entrepreneurial.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Totally. He's an entrepreneur at heart, now he's sitting on top of one of the biggest establishment mm-hmm. blue-chip companies around.
In the world.
Yep.
200 million customers, folks. And as Monica said, that the size of the assets, that's with a T, $1 trillion. Which is incredible especially when you realize that the U.S. national economy, the national gross national product of the U.S. is $10 trillion. So think about that. Their
exactly.
assets are one tenth of the U.S. Gross domestic product. Now that's very interesting, though, that you would say that you would comment on his management style, that it actually was entrepreneurial too. So it wasn't just entrepreneurialism for him wasn't just a means to an end. It was more of a way of life, wasn't it?
And it's still a way of life for him, even in running Citigroup. He goes down, he skips all the layers. He will walk into branches and check and see what they're doing.
That's the old Ray Kroc model.
Yeah,
McDonald's, he used to do that.
Exactly. And he still watches everything as if, I was in his office last year. I interviewed him many times for this book. And he had a secretary bring in any executive who charged more than $300 for lunch. Now, that sounds like a lot of money anyway, a $300 lunch. But he's like clamping down on these guys. You know, we're going to spend a lot of money.
These guys who make $10, $20 million a year, some of them.
Yeah, exactly. And you're not going to charge it on the company dime.
Well, so he was managing. He learned the lesson that small business owners know. You watch the pennies, the dollars will take care of themselves.
Oh, my God. If you will read this book and see so many examples of how he holds the cost down. That has been a hallmark of his management style. Is some people call it brutal cost cutting, but he said you have to button down the hatches even in the good times. So when the tough times come, you can survive.
So, folks, and what you've got, pardon me, Monica, we're going to have to take a break, but what you've got here in this book is a great track to run on to learn how to run a business, but there's also another side to this man and to the events of the last few years. We're going to get Monica to tell us a little bit about that because there's some important lessons there, too, and you know many of them, but we're going to remind you of some right after these messages. It's 20 till. Stay with us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Joan Pryde, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, will be with us as we review the most recent Kiplinger letter. Looking forward to getting Joan back on the show. We're visiting with a new friend, folks, and her name is Monica Langley. She's written an outstanding book that's just hit the New York Times bestseller list. She's an employee of Wall Street Journal, a reporter. If those of you who read the Wall Street Journal will see Monica's byline from time to time on the front page of the paper. And the book is called Tearing Down the Walls. Monica, tell us where it's available, please.
It is available now in all bookstores across the nation and online.
Well,
you can get it anywhere, I hope.
Yeah, I'm sure you can. And the last name is spelled Langley, if you're typing that into any of the online search engines. You know, Monica, this story about Sandy Weill is so interesting, and it would be a real wonderful story had there not been some of the controversy over the last 4 or so years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tell us about some of that.
Well, you know, Sandy's rise has always had struggles in it when he was ousted from American Express and then started over. It has a lot of momentum, but midlife failure. And then when he's right on top of the world in the last year, the company was hit with a lot of scandal. I mean, once the bear market came and the bull market mm-hmm. crashed, investors and regulators began looking for what happened, who to blame, and Citigroup, as the largest financial empire, became a perfect target. And Sandy Weill himself, who had always pushed the envelope, also came under fire.
Well, their company was connected to WorldCom,
yep.
to Enron.
Yep.
Jack Grubman was one of his employees.
Yep.
The famous or infamous, depending on whether you had any stock in any of these companies or not, Jack Grubman. And that whole little deal with him and his with Grubman and his the daycare issue and all that. I mean, you write about that in the book quite extensively. There's some beauty in this career, but there's also been some tarnish recently.
Exactly, his reputation has suffered quite a bit. It came out in the last few months, especially this fall, that his $20 million a year analyst Jack Grubman was touting stocks for reasons other than that they were good stocks. So investors who bought on his advice found out later that Jack Grubman was really trying to curry favor with Sandy, so Sandy Weill would recommend his children to get into a posh preschool here in New York City. And obviously that was a terrible thing. I mean, mm-hmm. investors relied
people
on advice that was biased, and they lost money.
Yeah, and Grubman will probably go to jail for that, won't he?
You know, he recently settled with the New York Attorney General to pay $15 million, and we will see if there's any further criminal implications, but he's trying to settle the whole mess.
But now,
Citigroup is trying to settle. There's the whole all the Wall Street firms are trying to settle, make a global settlement so that they can put this behind them, and Citigroup will pay the biggest fine of all because it was involved in so much because it is so huge.
If somebody doesn't go to jail over some of these things that shouldn't have happened, won't that really jade the American investor? Won't that really make us more cynical to think that all these people have to do is write a check and get off?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that is why you've seen some of the executives, you know, like Adelphi, mm-hmm. those executives who were taking out a lot of things personally, taken away in handcuffs. So I think that regulators and people in politics understand that. But I have to tell you, at some point this fall, even though people were furious at Citigroup and Sandy, at some point the New York Stock Exchange and others says you could wreck the whole financial system if you bring down Citigroup. It is the biggest financial empire in the world.
$1 trillion.
There were a lot of competing factors that went into the mix.
So does that fit in with the concept, the idea of too big to fail?
You know, that was something we heard in the 80s, you know, with the big banks. And I think that is something that's going on here. Citigroup is in 100 countries. Yeah. You know, 20% probably of all Americans do something with one of the Citigroup entities. Mm-hmm. They either have traveler's insurance or they have a Citi card, you know, the MasterCard, it used to be Visa, or they have a Smith Barney mutual fund. You know, it goes on and on. Or they have a home loan or a car loan with Citi Financial.
Monica, let me ask you this question, because I know you're going to have to go at the end of this segment, and you've agreed to come back another day and talk about this some more, and I appreciate that very much. But here's my question. Let's put whatever has happened behind us for a moment and say, and let me ask you this question. You're in New York City. You work for the Wall Street Journal. You study these issues. What kind of confidence can investors have in the future in dealing with companies like Citibank? I mean, Citigroup. Have the steps been taken? Have the practices been put in place to prevent this from happening again?
I think the lesson to be learned is that you have to have tougher safeguards in place so that these conflicts of interest do not run rampant. You know, in the throes of the bull market, everybody was trying to get business as fast as they could, and there are now safeguards that are being put in place. Congress has passed them, as have the New York Attorney General is making them a condition of the settlement with Wall Street firms. And I know Sandy Weill himself has apologized to investors and said things that look bad now in the harsh light of day, and he's trying to make changes within Citigroup. They've put in new corporate governance safeguards. So I think that with the proverbial gun to his head, so to speak, he has realize that nothing like this can happen again, or it will. I mean, Sandy had some heart-wrenching moments, and even he told me this fall, you know, the whole credibility of our market is at stake.
Monica, I got to stop you, but I have a quick question. I only have a few seconds.
Sure.
Did he bless this book even now?
You know what? He has mixed feelings about it. He did not go along with the project the whole way because it's an independent book, and people will read about him, warts and all. But I think that part of it he likes and part of it he doesn't. But I feel like I did my job. Tell it like it is.
I think you did, too, and I congratulate you on it. Congratulate you on the success. Tearing Down the Walls by Monica Langley. Monica, we'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Good luck.
Bye.
She'll be back, folks. I will be, too, right after these messages. Stay with me. 10 till. We're back. 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you for hanging around. What a great interview that was, visiting with Monica Langley. What a great visit, I should say. That was enjoyed hearing her talking about that, about some of the things that the good and the bad about a guy named Sandy Weill, the chairman of Citigroup. I want to move over though and talk about something different right now for just a few minutes as we wrap up the hour. I want you to think about some people who are out there in the world today doing something that we just need to think about them. And this is regardless of how you feel about what's going on in the world today, how you feel about the policies of our government, about the attitude toward Iraq, which side of the fence you're on. I want you to think about some people. I want you to think about the people who staff the military, whether it be active or reserve. I want you to just stop for a few minutes. Many of you have members of your family in the military. I have been in the military. My son has been in the military. He still is a reservist. And many of you have connections in one way or another to someone who's in the military, whether it be any of the services. I want you to just to think about. Sometimes I think it's important that we stop and think about individuals in individual assignments out there. It's one thing if we just think about the military in terms of just being the military, and we throw that big blanket, that hold that big umbrella up over that group of people. But what I want you to do for just a minute is think about the infantryman, a guy who's out there. He's out there in a fire team. He's part of a squad, that's part of a platoon, that's part of a company, that's part of a brigade. You know, a battalion and the brigade, you know the rest. You know how all that works. But basically, he's the guy out there carrying a rifle. He may have a grenade launcher. He's got all this equipment on him. He's got if he's stationed over in Kuwait, maybe now he's in Turkey. He's somewhere else. Maybe he's in Bahrain or Qatar or somewhere else in a staging area in preparation for going to war. He's got a gas mask. He's got a rucksack that weighs about 50 or 60 pounds. It's got his provisions on it, and he's got to carry all that around. There's a good chance that with his weapon and his rucksack and all of his other stuff, there's a good chance that the stuff on his body will weigh 100 pounds, at least 60 to 100 pounds, depending on what he's doing. If he's carrying a radio, you know, that's an extra weight. If he's part of a crew serve weapons crew, you know, he's carrying some extra weight. And that guy's out there right now doing something that you and I aren't having to do, and that's doing what his country asks him to do. It's not right at this moment, for this part of the discussion, folks, it's not important whether we agree with what's happening or not. The point is we have people like that. We have lots of people like that infantryman who are prepared to do what his country has asked him to do. We also have combat medics, and this young lady is prepared to go into battle behind that infantryman and take care of anybody who's hurt. And she's sitting there. She's getting prepared. She's preparing herself for the worst. She doesn't know what she's going to find if we actually wind up going to war, and if there actually is fighting on the ground. But you know what? She's prepared. She's there. And she's ready to go. She's ready to answer that leadership call because she is in a position. She's trained to do this. She knows what she's doing. And you know what? She's proud of herself. And I am too, and I hope you are. There's a cook on an aircraft carrier right now who's in the bowels of that ship tossing and turning. And his job is just to prepare meals for the people that keep the couple of thousand people who keep that aircraft carrier running and keep it moving towards its destination or however it's being deployed. And you might just imagine how that person feels as a cook on an aircraft carrier. Why would he do that? Why would he put himself in a position like that? Don't forget, this is volunteer. Our military is totally 100% volunteer. And there are clerks in motor pools. There's commanders who are about to send their troops perhaps into battle. There are pilots on, you know, ready to launch, and there are reservists all over the country about to be sent to war. Regardless of whether we agree with what's going on or not, folks, let's keep them in our thoughts. Let's keep them in our prayers, because they're our heroes, and I'm so proud of them. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.